Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about women's health with one of America's foremost integrative OBGYNs. He's Dr. Joel Evans. He's board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, and he also is the first physician in Connecticut to be dually certified, both in on the conventional side as well as in holistic medicine. He is also author of a great book, which is entitled The Whole Pregnancy Handbook. And in the part one of our podcast, we were discussing natural approaches to menopause. Dr. Evans favors, in many cases, eschewing the use of hormone replacement therapy wherever possible. There are some risks associated with HRT. It's also sometimes complicated getting it right. And so what are some of the natural alternatives to estrogen and progesterone and the bioidentical hormones?
Well, I think if we're looking at overall holistic approach, it's sort of what I alluded to when we finished our last segment, which is adjusting the functional medicine matrix so that the body is humming. So before I give a hot flash specific intervention, I again want to reduce inflammation, reduce oxidative stress, make sure the thyroid is normal, make sure the adrenal is normal, make sure that women are eating gluten if they're sensitive to gluten. Again, working on stress. All those things are so important. If we then are just skipping to the situation where those areas are in fact optimized, and we're saying, well, what is it that we can actually give? I think the thing that everyone thinks about is blood cohosh.
Which it turns out you're an expert on that because you many, many years ago, you created a clinical study at Columbia University Medical Center on the use of black cohosh.
Yes.
So you're one of the world's authorities on that. Tell us about that.
Herb. So black cohosh has been used forever for the use of hot flashes. In fact, it is approved in Germany by the Commission E, which is the German FDA, for efficacy in hot flashes. And the common way that it's taken now is in pill form, but you can also see it being used as a tincture. And there's a lot of scientific study on black cohosh. And the questions that people always ask about black cohosh, you know, the first one would be, is it an estrogen? So it's absolutely not.
Right, and that's a big concern. And some women absolutely can't take hormones, or they're scared to death about taking hormones. So we have to make sure that it's not acting in an estrogenic-like way.
Exactly. And there are some menopausal supplements that, you know, for example, you know, red clover, that might be acting in a estrogenic way, whereas black cohosh doesn't. So it doesn't create those kinds of problems. And that's why we were able to get institutional review board or IRB approval at Columbia University to give black cohosh to women with breast cancer.
And as a way of coping with their menopausal symptoms
exactly.
Without risk.
Exactly. So the concern about is it an estrogen? No, it's not. Then the next question is, as it should be, is it safe? And the answer is yes, it's safe. So there are numerous studies that show that it is safe. There are numerous studies that show that it can even have an enhanced effect of tamoxifen. So women with breast cancer, and these are laboratory studies, that the tamoxifen can actually be more effective if black cohosh is being used. And it also can destroy free radicals. So it can actually act as an antioxidant, which is a good thing when we're talking about health in general, but specifically with cancer. So it is absolutely safe. And then once we know that it's not an estrogen, we know that it's safe, then we say, is it effective? And this is where there's a little bit of a challenge in some of the literature, because hot flashes, when they're studied scientifically, those studies have a fairly high placebo effect. So when you're giving someone a placebo, it often is very effective. And so it's hard to prove that the black cohosh is more effective than the placebo.
As a segue, though, is that necessarily a bad thing? Because, you know, so much of your, close ministrations to patients are, you know, gaining a patient's confidence, encouraging a patient, providing them with hope and a positive direction. And if that has a healing impact, you know, so much the better, right?
Exactly. That's my point. So you're one step ahead of me, and we are totally on the same page.
So, and as long as it's certainly harmless, it doesn't have. So one aspect of a good placebo, if we're invoking the placebo effect, is we want something to not have any harmful effects.
Right. So that's why I started with it's not an estrogen. It's safe. And there are the vast majority of studies show that it is effective. And so that's why that is my go-to for menopause.
What's your take on the soy question? Because controversy is hot and heavy about the use of soy. Some OBGYNs say, oh, my goodness, it has an estrogenic effect. Don't go there. And yet other studies suggest that, yeah, there's an estrogenic effect, but that actually, like tamoxifen has an estrogenic effect, it may be a SERM. It may be an estrogen receptor modulator that actually blocks the receptors for estrogen in the places where we want to block them and enhances in the good places.
Right. So once again, you're totally all over this. So I think my professional reputation is dependent on me knowing the soy story. So I can tell you, I know the soy story, and there is too much hysteria about soy, and when you. It's a food. It's okay. Eat it as a food. In fact, you may even want to think about taking soy supplements in small doses for menopausal symptoms. However, that recommendation has to come after we look at the whole picture. But I want to just stress that soy is safe. The only time soy is not safe is if you're on tamoxifen. So whereas black cohosh can actually increase the effectiveness of tamoxifen, soy decreases the effectiveness of tamoxifen.
Wow.
So it's not that soy causes a cancer to progress. It's that soy knocks tamoxifen off the estrogen receptor.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And this speaks to what you were speaking of, Dr. Hoffman, which is maybe it's a type of SERM. And so I just want to agree with you and just take two or three minutes here to explain the fine point, because it's so important. There are two types of estrogen receptors on a cell. And when I say a cell, I mean a cell that's sensitive to estrogen. And it's an estrogen receptor alpha or an estrogen receptor beta. So they're called alpha and beta. And whatever receptor a particular compound binds to, or a particular type of estrogen binds to, determines what is going to happen with the cell. So if you bind, if you have a compound that binds to the alpha estrogen receptor, that's going to be stimulatory. And if it binds to the beta receptor, it's a brake. So the way I remember that, A is accelerator, B is brake.
Great.
And so this is the whole biochemistry and pharmacology behind these new selective estrogen response modulators or modifiers, because they bind to different receptors in different tissues. So you would want, for example, if you were making a compound or designing a compound for vaginal dryness, you would want to bind to the ER alpha, the estrogen receptor alpha in the vagina, to get rid of the dryness issues, and you'd want to bind to the beta receptor in the breast. So it's about a tissue-specific estrogen receptor binding. What soy does is soy binds to estrogen receptor beta. So it binds to the estrogen break.
Good.
So when we talk about it being an estrogen receptor, and you have physicians who are very well-intentioned, and they just get the headline, which is that soy binds to an estrogen receptor. And that's true. But they don't read past the headline to find out that it's the estrogen receptor beta that soy is primarily binding to. So that's why soy is a good thing as a food. The other thing that soy does is when it binds to the estrogen receptor, it binds 100 to 1,000 times with what we call less affinity than estradiol. So it's less estrogenic in terms of causing estrogen effect than estradiol. So it can actually prevent the more estrogenic estradiol, which is the main form of estrogen in women. It prevents, by binding on the receptor, prevents the estradiol from binding there.
It's so, like putting a glue in the lock so that the key won't go in.
Yep. Exactly. So it's for those reasons that I think soy is a good thing, except for women on tamoxifen.
Interesting. That's a very, very, very unique perspective on that. You are, I see here from your bio, the author of a chapter in one of my favorite books. It's called Integrative Gastroenterology. So you might ask the question, well, how does an OBGYN weigh in on gastroenterology? It turns out, and I see this a lot, women have a lot of gastro problems that seem to be related to hormones. They describe diarrhea, constipation, that goes in swings based on their hormonal fluctuations at different times of the month. So, first you said that there is some kind of interaction between the gut and your estrogen, that if you have gut problems, that your estrogen may build up. But conversely, the hormones in a woman's body may influence the functioning of her gut. So explain that.
So there is a direct relationship between hormone balance and gut health. And so if there are women listening to this show that have been pregnant, they may recall that they struggled with constipation. And that's because of progesterone. So progesterone will slow down the transit time through the intestinal tract. And so women that have hormone imbalance will find if there's too much progesterone or the estrogen-progesterone ratio is off, meaning there's too much progesterone relative to the estrogen, will find that they are struggling with constipation. We also find the inflammation that's associated with menstruation can lead to increased movement of the bowels, because the same chemicals that the uterus makes during a menstrual period will float around in the pelvic fluid and stimulate the colon and create cramping and diarrhea.
These are prostaglandins that are produced
there? Exactly. Those are pro-inflammatory cytokines. Prostaglandins are one type. Leukotrienes would be another type. And so it's those pro-inflammatory cytokines that, creating contraction of the uterine muscle, also create pelvic pain.
And how can we shift that balance to a less inflammatory state?
So, believe it or not, one of the main ways we can do that is through diet, so eating foods that are less inflammatory, that don't have a lot of arachidonic acid. So not eating red corn-fed meat, for example, or a lot of animal fat, but grass-fed, free-range animals. Dairy can be pro-inflammatory as well. Some shellfish can be pro-inflammatory. And eating more anti-inflammatory foods, like those oily fish, like salmon, mackerel, and sardines. Getting rid of stress, because stress is always shown to be pro-inflammatory. So stress creates a pro-inflammatory environment.
You can have an inflammatory personality that creates a cascade in your body.
Exactly. So an inflammatory personality is inflamed themselves, and they create inflammation in those around them.
Indeed. It can be viral.
Exactly.
That's interesting. So tell us a little bit about this new enterprise of yours. I see you're engaged with an individual named Eric Schmidt. I seem to have heard tell about this guy. That's not one and the same guy who runs Google, is it?
That is the same guy who was their first CEO, yes.
So, what, it's spelled L-I-I-V, and it's billed as a technology company that's going to provide the latest health information to healthcare consumers, physician offices, and the enterprise market. What's that all about?
So, basically, what... Now, Eric was one of our seed funders, and I have to thank him for getting us going, and he now has a very backseat role as just one of our investors, and we have a very dedicated and qualified management team that is involved with taking a core nugget of health information. So it is up-to-date health information that is delivered in a way that reflects the best practices of the best there is in healthcare. So it is looking at delivering information to patients in a way that they can understand, which involves them then being able to say, wow, this is what I have wrong with me, and this is why changing my lifestyle will help. This is why changing my diet will help. This is why reducing stress will help, or this is why a particular medication will help. And by looking at patient stories, by hearing expert physicians through video, through the written word, deliver this information, patients then become informed and empowered, and then they go on to change their health through changing their behavior. And so we package this content in different ways to the needs of our customers. So if our customer happens to be a company that wants to improve the health of its employees, we call that an enterprise solution. And so we deliver this information. The client is the...
It used company. To be called employee health, but now
exactly.
It's in a new guise, electronically
exactly.
Delivered.
Or this can be a healthcare system that wants to deliver this information to their patients. And then most important, what excites me as being their chief medical officer, is we're bringing a functional medicine approach to all aspects of health. And so explaining how decreasing inflammation through diet, which is sort of just what I went into, can actually help with heart disease. And we have cardiologists that understand that. We have the best of all the opinion leaders in the functional medicine world that have given us video segments and are writing content for us. So there is no better collection of health content on the planet right now in terms of the most up-to-date as well as functionally and holistically and integrative medicine oriented. And so for doctors that want to use this in their practice, it's called VIAS, VAYAS, viashealth.com, and they would then be able to give this information to their patients.
And for them, it's for a physician who may be less acquainted with this model, it's kind of a turnkey operation. You want to learn about functional medicine. I don't really have the time or expertise to lecture you about that, but here's a whole set of resources I can turn you on to.
Exactly. How many times can a doctor explain what a detox diet is? So you know what? We have the people who created it explain it. Or how many times can we explain inflammation? How many times can we explain leaky gut? It's all there. How many times can we explain mitochondrial health? All the opinion leaders are on this site.
Well, that's good stuff. It's great that they selected you as chief medical officer because we know we're going to get a lot of holistic, natural, integrative input.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank
you. Good deal. So, but it also represents a real shifting of the center of gravity in medicine from, you know, the authoritative doctor who makes pronouncements to the patient who meekly obeys and follows instructions to the empowered patient who seeks out self-care opportunities for him or herself.
Right, right. It's all about a partnership.
Well, that's great.
A beautiful partnership, yep.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be really, really transformative and very exciting. You know, utilizing
technology for a healing partnership. That's what we're about.
Well, good deal. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Because I actually are on several fronts. Number one, we got the book, the whole pregnancy handbook. That's in new editions available, the usual places, right? Amazon, et cetera. And also, the Center for Women's Health, where you are founder and director, and you also work with a group of practitioners there, practicing integrative obstetrics and gynecology. Are you still birthing babies there, or are you?
I'm not birthing babies anymore, but we're doing actually not only holistic women's health, but we're actually seeing men. I have Monique Class, who's a certified nurse practitioner with her master's in holistic nursing, and she works together with me, so we're seeing men and doing men's health. So we actually are seeing men at the Center for Women's Health, and so we are going to be changing our name shortly. We're going to be bringing in actually a expert in prostate and men's sexual health as well. So we've got big plans for the future.
So you're going to handle all manner of plumbing problems, crossing
the divide. You got it. You got a plumbing problem, you come here.
Okay, good deal. And also, another call to action is check out live.com for content, whether you're a health professional or whether you're a private individual, you can access lots of important content there, correct? Well, thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on your pioneering work in the field of integrative medicine as it applies to women's health. And thanks for being a pioneer on the functional medicine front. Functional medicine has taught me an enormous amount about how to figure out complex issues with patients.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thank you. Great conversation as usual. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest, Dr. Joel Evans. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.